Okay, I know it is Gen 2 Day on the show, but if you guys will allow me, I thought we could talk about this headline from Jack Wallen over at ZDNet. He writes that Fedora 40 is the fastest operating system he's ever tested.
Wow.
Now, I mean, I don't know if that's true. I mean, maybe for him it is, but that's a great headline for Fedora 40. So I think we got to dig into Fedora 40 on the show today. I know it's Gen 2 Day, but we got to talk about this. Hello, friends, and welcome back to your weekly Linux talk show. My name is Chris.
My name is Wes.
And my name is Brent.
Well, coming up on the show today, we are just back from Texas Linux Fest in Austin. We've got stories and interviews to share. And Linux Fest Northwest is next weekend, so we've got a lot of things you need to know. But we will start this week with a look at Fedora 40. Then we'll round out the show with some great boosts and some picks. So before I get any further, I want to say time-appropriate greetings to our virtual lug. They're right there. Hello, Mumble Room.
Hello.
Hello, Chris. Hey, Wes. And
aloha.
Okay, hello.
A fine spirit in the Mumble Room today.
I like it. I think we're like kind of evenly split between quiet listening and on air, too. Hello, everybody up there. Nice to have you on board. And good morning to our friends over at Tailscale, tailscale.com/Linux Unplugged. It's programmable networking software that is private and secure by default, powered by
Wago.
That's right. And, you know, Tailscale threw one heck of a party at Texas Linux Fest. That was great. Great venue, great crowd, free drinks. What's not to love?
Secure, amazing mesh networking. And they know how to have a good time.
They sure do. They sure do. So go get on 100 devices for free and build a private mesh network between all of your machines. I run everything in here. I put my Nextcloud in here, my DNS in here, my Plex and Jellyfin instances. Nothing is on the public internet anymore that I run, and I don't have any inbound ports. It's zero trust networking, and any enterprise or individual can use it. Go see what I'm talking about at tailscale.com/Linux Unplugged. So just a day or two after this show comes out, it is the Fedora 40 release. This last week, they had their go-no-go meeting. And it was determined that Fedora is, in fact, go for launch on Tuesday, April 23rd. It comes with GNOME 46 and Plasma 6.0 and Linux 6.8 under the hood. And one big change that I was kind of sad to see go, I mean, I think it is kind of time, but when I have been on an LTE connection, I have been so thankful for Fedora's Delta RPM feature that is being phased out in Fedora 40. It's been in the works for some time. In some cases, it's actually been a negative on like lower-end systems. The CPU overhead to do the Delta, not so great.
Yeah, it seems like the savings kind of got smaller over time. And yeah. The problems you're mentioning there.
The bandwidth got better over time. The machines I wanted to do it became more diverse, so I kind of understand.
I also benefited from this, and I'm curious what the incentive is to get rid of it. I mean, systems these days are a little faster, so are we really worrying about CPU usage and such?
One of the things that happened between the time that we instituted what was originally known as Yum Presto, which was the Delta RPM feature, to now, was that our updates infrastructure changed in that they blew away the repo and regenerated it completely from scratch with new updated RPMs. This has a very annoying side effect in that we don't actually have the historical chain of packages from GA to the latest updates release, the updates push, to be able to compose Delta RPMs to match all the combinations, to be able to let you update with, you know, a lower network overhead. And so for a lot of people, Delta RPMs just didn't do anything anymore. And that's really where it came down to, right? Like the amount of server-side infrastructure for composing it, the time that it actually takes to run it, plus the deficiencies related to infrastructure changes meant that Delta RPMs just wound up not being as useful as they should be.
Thank you for that insight. I think that is probably a great explanation. What do you think, Brent? Did that answer your question?
It sure did. Now, Chris, you gave Fedora 40 a spin this morning, I noticed. How'd it go?
It's a nice, tight release. I don't know if there's any blow-away feature, but if you're a fan of the Premiere desktops that ship with Fedora, that being the Workstation Spin, which has GNOME, or the Plasma Spin, which is going to ship with Plasma 6.0, there's a lot here for you to like. These are both very good releases. Very, very good releases. On the GNOME 46 side, I think the thing that I'd like to spend a moment talking about is files. It doesn't really get much attention these days. And that's why I'm even more appreciative that the developers did the hard work of refactoring large sections of files, or at least portions of files.
Yeah, an unsexy utility, but when you need it, you need it. Yeah. It's nice to have something that has actual capabilities.
And they've rearranged the way it shows you what it's working on. They've put a little, the progress indicator is moved, and the information it displays is a little more useful. So files have seen a lot of love, and the global search is just faster. And I think that's what Jack is getting at.
I was kind of wondering, Jack didn't quite attribute, you know, if there were reasons or a reason for all this speed up. But yeah, I'm curious if that really did match your experience.
It does feel fast. It's because it's a combination of everything's on, you know, modern GTK now. We're on Wayland. We're several iterations into pretty solid Wayland support. And so if you've got a 3D accelerated desktop, the general daily interactions feel really sharp and really fast. You know, like I hit the overview button and that looks really good. And then I launch the files browser and that comes up and it looks really sharp and it launches really fast. And everything is, the animation feels really refined and professional, like beyond what Apple is doing these days.
Wow.
I think people will say in probably the next macOS release or two that Apple clearly looked back at GNOME for inspiration on how to make macOS a better desktop. I really think that's the direction 46 is going in. I mean, it's really, really nice. And then on the Plasma 6 side, I mean, we've talked about Plasma 6 pretty extensively on the show, but it's just such a solid release for such an overhaul. And then, of course, you've got the updates that have come along in there. And
this is just making me feel grateful that we have both of these projects at really nice places right now.
Yeah.
What a time to be a desktop Linux user.
And so Fedora 40 really benefits from that. Plus, then you get Linux 6.8. So you get a pretty modern Linux in there as well. You also get like an updated to some of the, you know, core developer tools and things like that.
All the other usual good updates you see in a Fedora release.
And, you know, Silverblue and the other spins are also getting their updates. We'll talk about it more, I think, depending on the interest we gauge from the audience. But I wanted to at least try it. And my takeaway was not one particular thing I felt like I could come on the show and say this one thing is great, like Butterfest, right? That was a huge feature. But just in terms of developing and delivering a solid Linux desktop experience that goes from strength to strength and features the best stuff that our leading desktop environments are doing, they nailed it. And that's, like, I think what you want from Fedora. So I think in that context, I think Fedora 40 is going to be a very good release. Oh, we have a lot to let everybody know about. Let's start with a meetup that's coming up for Mr. Brentley in May.
Yeah, we're going to be in Berlin once again. And when I say we, I mostly mean me, although you gents need to come at some point.
He forgot to buy us tickets.
Yeah.
I'll see what I can
do. Oh, okay.
Do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you're working on that.
Yeah. That's May 11th, so that'll be in Berlin. Tentative location is at Seabase, that hackerspace sort of spaceship that I keep talking about every time I'm there.
I don't know why you'd go anywhere else. That seems pretty cool.
It is a pretty sweet spot, but it's nice to switch it up from time to time. And I haven't actually confirmed with them. They just said, yeah, you guys come anytime you want, but I guess I should let someone know because 40 people showing up. This is something. So we do have a meetup page for that, which is linked in the show notes. If you want to just RSVP, that'd be nice, but you don't have to per se. But we'd love to see you.
Yeah. It seems like it's been a really great event. I wish I could have been to all of them. So that'll be May 11th, meetup.com/JupiterBroadcasting. And then in the more immediate future, like next weekend, it is Linux Fest Northwest 2024. And if you can't make it, well, the next best thing is go grab a Podcasting 2.0 app at podcastapps.com because we will be live in our RSS feed, 9:45 a.m. Seattle time, 12:45 Eastern Daylight Time, 4:45 p.m. UTC, Saturday, 9:45, right as the fest doors are opening.
You know, when you mentioned this earlier, you didn't say you're going to be this specific.
Yeah. I know.
Well, is that a guarantee that all of you are going to be ready right at the end?
You know, it is a great opportunity for the audience that can't always catch this show when it's live to catch it a little earlier, like maybe you guys in Europe.
And we're going to try to we'll be trying to capture the feeling in the Expo Hall. We're going to try to have Brent remote in one of the rooms as they're getting ready for setup, just to really kind of give you what the vibe is like. Stuff that won't make it into the released version of a show, but, you know, if you tune in live on Saturday, you'll catch that. Then on Sunday, we're doing Linux Unplugged live from Linux Fest Northwest at our regular time, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 p.m. UTC. And it should be a lot of fun because there's going to be some great folks showing up at Linux Fest. I happen to know of some news that's coming out of there. We'll have conversations around that. And plus, there's going to be a new Ubuntu to talk about as well. And if you are able to make it, by the way, that all is going to be pending in the RSS feed. So if you have a Podcasting 2.0 app, all you have to do is just be subscribed to our RSS feed. Or you can tune in at jblive.fm. We will have it at the jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar as well. During the day at Linux Fest, we're doing another barbecue. System 76 and JB are throwing a barbecue in the parking lot during lunch Saturday.
These are famous at this point.
I know. And I think maybe we're going to rent a grill. Like, we're working on that. I think Emma's close. But I still think we could probably use, like, backup support, maybe like a backup barbecue or two, some tables, things to facilitate barbecuing, like spatulas and tongs and things that we're not going to have. We could still use that if you're a local.
Barbecue sauces and hot sauces and such.
I saw Olympia Mike is jumping in with tables and perhaps a barbecue. I think we could still use that. Yeah. Or, you know, sauces. Cause you know, we're not going to.
Yeah. Condiments.
Yeah. We're going to have the basics. We're going to do like a Costco run. And so we're going to have like the core essentials, but anything fancy, we're not going to have. So if you want to share with the community, please bring it. We're going to attempt to make it work.
Can we do a pineapple again?
Maybe. Yeah, let's grab a pineapple. That's a good idea. You got a lot going on Saturday. You got a talk going on Saturday.
I do have a talk. I forgot about that till this very moment. I guess I should start something out there.
Yeah, buddy, better get started on that.
Yeah, and we have a bunch of other friends giving talks on Saturday as well. We've got Carl from System 76, of course. Alex is giving the first opening talk in that room. And also Neil, you're in there, and Frank from Nextcloud's in there. That's just day one.
Yeah.
And day two.
I was
two,
weirded out by being on the front page of the site.
And day two is just as action-packed in the exact same room. Olympia Mike's giving a talk, 5 Reasons to Love NixOS, which I think there are likely more than 5. And our dear Wes Payne, you're giving a talk.
Yeah, deploying NixOS anywhere. But gosh, I got to follow Olympia Mike. That's going to be tough.
Well, I like that he can prime them with, like, here's the basic things to understand about Nix. And then you can come in with, here's to how to take over anything, any Linux box.
Yeah, you got a Linux box somewhere? Let's put Nix on there.
I feel like whoever organized these talks set them up in a nice kind of trajectory. For the listeners.
It steps you through it. And then right after Wes, well, so between Wes's talk, deploying NixOS anywhere, there's lunch. But there's also after that, in that same room, it's Linux Unplugged. We're going to be in the room Wes is in for his NixOS anywhere in the room that Olympia Mike is in. We're just going to do it after lunch. We'll probably be scrambling during lunch.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to need like a food runner to grab us some food because we're going to have to set up everything in that room to do the show.
Now, is this the very first like official session for a Linux Unplugged Live session?
I guess
we usually do it in the hallway track or whatever.
It might be the first one on the calendar. It's possible Linux Action Show has been on the calendar a few times.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
But this is definitely the first time Linux Unplugged has ever been an official live session on a calendar.
I feel like room HC108, if you're a JB listener, that's the room you want to stick in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff in
there. Keep your eye out on that one, yeah. And then we kind of want to do something fun. So we're going to ask the audience that makes it to our live Linux Unplugged, what was your first Linux box? What was your hardware? What was great about it? And what was awful about it? And I know when I asked you, Brent, you started thinking about this. Wes, I don't think I know your answer, what your first Linux box was. And I also want to ask if you're listening, boost in and tell us about yours, because we'll include yours while we're doing the Q&A with the audience. And I think that could be a nice way where the boosts and the live audience can kind of intermix a little bit. So tell us what was great and awful about your very first Linux box. I'll tell you, I'll give you a preview of mine.
Oh, really?
Mine had like a quasi-transparent blue case.
What?
And it was like an AMD K6. Yeah, that was wow. My first personal Linux box. Yeah. And that was it. That was.
Well, can we define these factors a little bit? Because I ran a Linux on like my first PC that I had as a kid.
Yeah.
But only for like a couple hours. That doesn't really count. You're talking like daily driver kind of box, right?
Well, at least the first one you spend some time with.
All right.
Yeah, consistently running Linux on.
Yeah. My first machine was probably at school, although I'd love to hear about those too, because those are probably some pretty rare machines. So I'll leave it up to the booster. And if you make it in person, I want you to start thinking about this now, because we're going to go around with a microphone and ask some of you about your stories. Now, let's talk about Texas Linux Fest, boys. And before we get there, I want to mention that the way we got down there and the way that an independent show like this was able to travel, all three of us, and get an Airbnb and do all of that is because a member of the community, Donald, who owns a company called Signary, reached out and sponsored us to get down there. It was a really cool thing to do. And Signary is an on-demand cybersecurity firm that serves all across the United States, not just Texas. They are local to Texas, but they work in multiple states. And they were not only one of the primary sponsors of Texas Linux Fest, but they also got us down there. And Donald took us out to dinner the night we got there. So I encourage everybody, go to Cynary.com. It's Cynary.com, Cynary.com. Go check them out. It's really because of them that this coverage was made possible at all. Donald didn't ask for any kind of special placement in the show or anything, any kind of thanks like that, but I think they definitely deserve it because it wasn't cheap to get all of us down there, get our, you know, the flights and the Airbnb and all of that. And then he took us out to an expensive place at dinner too. So Cynary.com, they were really great. And if your business needs some cybersecurity work, some help, these guys really seem to know their stuff. We saw their crew come to Texas Linux Fest and just like devour the event. They left the booth to us. It was like
clearly a lot of sharp folks.
Yeah. There. And we got to take over their booth. And because of that, we got to do a live stream. We had coverage and we were front and center at Texas Linux Fest 2024. Now, it had been a few years since the Texas Linux folk got together. The pandemic threw things a little awry. I first went, I think, in, I don't want to say, but I think 2015, 2016, a long time ago. And it felt like way, way too much time had passed since the last Texas Linux Fest. And that was the general vibe, I think, from everybody that made it. Too much time had passed since we all got together. It's organized by a group of volunteers. It's put together in one of the best venues in Austin, truly one of the best venues in Austin. And they have a giant expo hall, and then they have wonderful rooms upstairs that are properly air conditioned, properly partitioned. Like, it's when you come into the facilities, it is rare in event facilities.
And the views were gorgeous, too. That whole of the massive glass wall looking out onto Austin.
And like I said, Terry Black's, which is one of the best barbecue places in the world. I know people argue if it is the best. I won't say it is the best, but I'd say it's in the top of the best barbecue places that average folk can actually visit. And when we arrived in Austin, we went to Terry Black's. We didn't go home to our Airbnb. We didn't go drop our bags off. We went directly to Terry Black's and we met up with Donald. And Brent broke his no meat rule for some actual rare Texas barbecue. What'd you think?
You know, I had a feeling going into this trip that I'd have to do this, and that was okay. I was ready for like a meal or two. I didn't realize how this would define the trip for me.
It's a lot of eating, dude. It's a lot.
Yeah. There were no options other than meat for the most part and everywhere we went. But I will say, you know, being a hunter and such, which is, you know, ask me questions about it later. It's complex. Yeah, this was certainly some of the best I had ever had.
So worth breaking the rules for a little bit, I guess.
Well, and it seems breaking the rules immediately when we arrived and then breaking the rules again the next day at the exact same location because, you know, some other people wanted to go to Terry Black's again and we didn't say no.
Can't say no. I
mean, across the street from the venue is a pretty convenient lunch option at that.
Yeah. But I didn't really know what the Terry Black's experience was going to be like because you said, oh, yeah, across the street from Terry Black's is going to be great. But you didn't really describe how it's a whole thing.
And it's very popular.
Yeah.
There's a long line.
Folks talk about the meat and the quality of the meat and the, you know, the tasty things there. But yeah, there's a whole other actual experiential aspect.
Waiting to get into the place.
The queuing is part of the experience. And they've got this figured out because the queue snakes its way past all the smokers, past all the wood that they use that's properly seasoned, that they use for all the smoking and stuff. And so you kind of get this tour without even knowing you're doing a tour. And halfway through, they also have like a drinks bar. So they've got this queuing stuff figured out in Texas.
Yeah, and then once you're in, it is business time.
Oh.
There is no messing around with the gals behind the sides bar. They will move you through, and they'll get you checked out as fast as possible.
I screwed up both times that we went through, and I'm still nervous about it.
It means we have to go back. You got to practice.
I've gone through enough now that I just find it humorous. Like, I'm here to buy. So, like, don't yell at me. Like, I don't, I'm fine. And I looked for a hot second at, like, some drink that they had, and I spent one beat too long, and they both started yelling at me. But it's so, so, so worth it. So we ended up in the booth. Not, like, a booth at Texas Linux Fest, but the booth at Texas Linux Fest. The biggest booth. The booth that was, when you open the doors to the expo hall, we are right there, like the greeting committee, right there, like front and center, framed for everybody to come say hello, which worked out great. I'm not really complaining other than I wish I had some branding and stuff we could have put up because I just didn't really think about it.
We traveled light this time
around. Yeah, we sure did. This is what we were really attempting to make it one of our lightest travels ever because we didn't drive, we flew. And we typically, we put a lot of gear, we can put swag and stuff in the RV and I can drive that or we'll load up like, you know, a crossover type size vehicle and we can fill the back with swag and banners and whatnot. But this time it was pretty much what we could carry on the airplane. So we came really, really light. And the plan was originally to drive down, but that just didn't work out with the timing of Scale and then Texas Linux Fest. And then Linux Fest Northwest is next weekend. So it just
how would you have gotten back?
Yeah, I don't have a warp drive. So we ended up flying, which meant light, light, light. So we had no logos, no banners, no nothing except for our gear and ourselves. And we were right there front and center. And as we were trying to get live, we realized that these new super strong mic stands that we had bought, these flexible arms, they're like gooseneck flexible arms that supposedly support
four pounds,
something ridiculous like that. And we start setting up and we realize as we take them out of the box, these things do not hold our microphones. Like it's the most stupid thing to get derailed by.
And we thought we were doing a good job of pre-planning that. We had intentionally tried to pick the best option.
And we got three identical ones. We had them still in the box so that they were easy to bring with us in our luggage.
Wes was doing like gooseneck acrobatics to try to get his to balance just right.
I found a spot that kind of worked, but I mean, you still couldn't quite get it in a way that either was too low or was right in the way of your hand that you probably wanted to use to type on your keyboard.
It doesn't help that we have like 3-pound microphones. We have big, heavy microphones.
I didn't see one moment where we were willing to not use those.
Yeah.
So maybe it's on us.
Yeah, maybe. But Brent got mine working literally with some twine and a rubber band.
Always bring string.
He like put it into some sort of gooseneck loop and then gave the loop structure with the twine and the rubber band.
That's why you bring me, right?
And that's how I did day one and day two.
Yeah, we decided we really didn't want to figure this out again, so we just left those in place overnight. Yeah,
we packed up all our gear except for the stupid improv mic stands, and we left those. So if anybody knows of some great travel mic stands, please send them into the show because it was embarrassing. And the worst part is we're running late because it's such a dumb reason, and we're the welcoming committee for the entire thing. We're right there front and center when you open the doors. And we're sitting there scrambling, and people are coming up, hey, guys, and they're like all in a great mood to see us. And we're like, hi, sorry, we're busy right now. We have a disaster. Actually, Brent does great. Brent jumps up and usually chats with people and lets Wes and I troubleshoot things. But we did get the stream up. We did get the microphones in place. And those will be the whole day one and two that we streamed are at extras.show if you want to listen to them. We'll play you some highlights in today's episode. But if you'd like to hear the whole day from start to end, you can go listen at extras.show. And of course, while we were there, our friends gave some talks like Alex. Alex from Self-Hosted did a great talk. Kind of like the mechanics of how Tailscale works.
I saw a lot of folks in there. I think we're excited to go learn more and play more with Tailscale after that talk.
Yeah, it was a standing room only. Like there was every seat was taken and we were just standing in the back and there was other people standing around too. It was really well attended. I think the organizers felt like they hadn't done a very good job at the event. That was some of the sense I got. We'll get to some more of this later, but I actually think they did a fantastic job, especially now having behind the scenes of how Linux Fest Northwest gets organized when you're dealing with a group of volunteers that haven't done this for a couple of years. And you're working with venues that charge so much now. That's another thing that's changed.
Right.
Like just a cart of coffee through the grapevine, we found out cost the fest $2,000 just for one of those carts of coffee.
I didn't even see it. Coffee cart, actually.
They had some up in the room.
Oh.
Yeah, up in the room areas. But, yeah, I mean, at $2,000 a pop, you're only going to do a couple of those. You're right? I mean, it's just wild how much these venues will charge for some of this stuff. And to have them have to navigate that, I just feel like they did a much better job than they're giving themselves credit for. It was a great venue. People were really, really happy to be there.
I think that's what counts, right? It seemed like everyone had a good time. There was a lot of interest in the talk, so those were well attended. I heard from multiple people like, oh, yeah, you know, in the past, the talks have been really a reason for me to show up to Texas Linux Fest, and I think they were rewarded for that again, which I think means they'll be back.
Now, I want to get into some of our other stories and some of the things that we saw, but first, I thought maybe we'd play some of our chats that we had while we were there with folks, because while we were streaming, we had several opportunities to sit down and talk with folks, and some of the conversations we had were just really fantastic. Collide.com/unplugged. You've probably heard me talk about Collide before. I think it's one of those tools that if it was around when I was in IT, I would have stuck around for a little bit longer. But did you hear that Collide was just recently acquired by 1Password? It's a big deal. It's a big deal because it's advancing their mission to make user-focused security the norm, not the exception. For over a year, Collide Device Trust has helped companies with Okta ensure that only known and secure devices can access your data. That means it checks for phished credentials or makes sure that a system is compliant before it can connect to your network. And they're still doing that, but now they're doing it as part of 1Password. So, if you got Okta and you've been meaning to check out Collide, now's a great time. Collide comes with a library of pre-built device posture checks, and when things come up, and they do come up, you can write your own custom checks for just about anything. And you can use Collide on devices that don't have MDM software installed. So your Linux fleet, yep, you can manage it along with your Windows and your Macs, all from one dashboard. But it also means contractor devices, or every BYOD device somebody can think of, and I have seen all kinds. Collide is an end-to-end solution. And now, well, now it's part of 1Password, and they're only going to get better. So go support the show and check out Collide. See if it'll work for you. Go to KOLIDE.com/unplugged. Go learn how Collide works. You can watch the demo, support the show, and perhaps improve your personal user experience. It makes it great for your end users, too. Collide's the end-to-end solution we recommend. Go to KOLIDE.com/unplugged. Collide.com/unplugged.
Now, as I like to do at every fest, I try to figure out who has come the furthest. And I think this time around, it was Frank Karlicek from Nextcloud. He came straight from FOSS Asia in Vietnam. And I don't know how he was still awake, but he did join us for a conversation that I think was pretty interesting.
There was an announcement that came out from Germany about 30,000 government workstations switching to Linux. And one of the lines in the Ars Technica article that seemed like I wanted to have more information about, and your tweet helped me even highlight it, is they're migrating from SharePoint to Nextcloud.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a really big deal. Is there any details you can share there with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is an interesting project. We are working on this like for years, actually. I think 3 years or maybe even four.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's fascinating because there is like a few years ago or many years ago, there was this famous project of Munich moving to open source and Linux.
Right.
And this was a failure for different reasons. One of it was probably that it all started on the desktop. So they started to move like Windows to Linux workstations. And they really had trouble with like acceptance of like the normal office workers. They're like, oh, this looks different. Oh, that's weird. I don't want that. At the time, I was involved in the KDE project a lot. And I still remember that we got a bug report that why are these folder icons blue? They should be yellow.
No, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
Because come on, the yellow in Windows, why are they suddenly blue? That's like I need a training to understand that now. So this was a bit challenging. And in this project now, I think there is a lot of learnings. And this starts on the server, not on the client now. Like replacing Exchange with an open source alternative, replacing SharePoint with Nextcloud and so on. And people can at the moment still use their Windows or Mac or phone, tablet, whatever they use. But the migration will start on the server first, which I think is a better strategy.
Do you know, are they also going to switch out the Windows applications first, like say Firefox?
No, they will. They also will move to LibreOffice some other things. But this is a little bit like second phase, basically.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, I mean, that would make sense, right? You get them on the back-end services. That's the least probably impactful to their day-to-day work. You get that done ahead of time, and then they're compatible with whatever they move to.
Yeah.
So is that battle lost, in your opinion, then? You, citing Munich as the example.
You mean the desktop?
Yeah, the typical office worker using Linux.
I don't think it's lost. It's at the time, I mean, the Munich project was, I don't know, 15 years ago. This were the time where a lot of the applications that were used are still like desktop applications. Nowadays, a lot happens in the browser, in the cloud.
True, yeah.
And I think this is another opportunity because if they move to, I don't know, desktop world, to something that happens in the browser, and it could be Microsoft 365, could also be Nextcloud, this is like an easier migration than just, I don't know, replacing Outlook with Thunderbird or something.
What's changed a lot in that sort of 10-15 year period as well is the adoption of mobile devices.
Yeah.
People do everything everywhere.
Yeah. Exactly. You can do email on their phone now. The other thing that I kind of recall not working so well in Munich is they deployed their own Linux distribution.
Yes.
Do you think
that was what you did back then?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was more common. Is that a similar approach they're going to take this time, do you know? Or are they going to go with something that's more off the shelf?
I hope not.
Yeah.
I think this was a mistake. I don't know. I mean, the IT people at the time who worked on the Munich project, I mean, that did a really good job, but that tried to do too much, right? I mean, there are Linux distributions which are good and desktop environments that are good. I'm not picking any sides here, but there's things you can just take and use, right? I mean, why do you build your own thing?
Right.
That's just crazy.
And it's not only is it a huge hill to climb, but then it's tricky to find anybody that has any expertise. Everybody has to be in-house taught. Yeah. And so that's a lot of friction too.
Yeah.
And there's no training programs around any of that. You got to create all of that.
Crazy.
I think we're a lot more mature in the software development lifecycle and a lot of that stuff now too. Like we understand what maintenance means over a decade.
Well, some.
Some, yes. Fair point.
Yeah, that's right.
I know that there's a very similar project in France happening at the moment. And they are actually in the process of like, look at this, all these nice, cool open source tools on the internet. Let's take it and build our own product on top of it. And we'll hire like 100 developers who maintain it. And basically they're forking everything. And it's the same mistake. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't understand what they're getting into.
A huge, huge pile of work, really, I have to imagine. Well, I am also feeling kind of more positive about this. Sounds like you're feeling a little more positive about this particular transition, especially in a way there'd be a good gain if they just got the back end services off of proprietary. I mean, the desktop is also great to see.
In self-hosted, basically one of the entire main premises of the show is own your data.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which includes owning the outages and the data loss and the backups and everything else. But, you know, and Nextcloud is fundamental to that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, at least, in my home lab.
Yeah. I replaced all my cloud syncing, all my calendar, all of that with Nextcloud.
Yeah. Do you remember? We used to use stuff like Dropbox back in the day.
Yeah. And Google Calendar and Google Contacts.
Never heard of it.
Frank, I hope you enjoy the stay here. I hope you like the fest. Thank you for sitting down with us.
Thanks a lot.
Spend a little time. It's always good to catch up.
Thank you.
Are we going to see you at Linux Fest Northwest too?
Yes.
Oh, you maniac. Good.
Yeah. I don't know. I live in the plane nowadays.
Yeah, I bet.
Do we know? Did Frank get a chance to get some good Texas barbecue?
Yeah. Did you hear?
I didn't hear.
Well, we'll have to check in at Linux Fest. One of the things that he doesn't talk a lot about, but he's also quite the photo bug. And I think he goes and spends a lot of this time going out there and getting photos.
It's a nice excuse to explore the city.
Yeah, what a great little side hobby if you're going to be traveling like that anyways. What a great side hobby. So this other interview that we want to feature is with listener Keith. And one of our favorite things about going to these events is just discovering how much better our audience is than us as people.
No kidding. It's so true.
And the things that they accomplish. And Brent does a great job of kind of circulating from time to time and finding people that could be interesting to chat with on the show. And he sat Keith down with us, and Keith sat down, we thought, to talk about Wireshark and just, packet sniffing. And we're like, okay, Wes and I are kind of still setting up for the morning, so we were actually kind of heads down, and we were kind of just sort of chatting with Keith about, packet sniffing. That's pretty neat, right?
Yeah.
And then somewhere in the conversation, it became obvious to us that the reason why Keith was packet sniffing is because he was testing software that's going to get deployed on the International Space Station. Then we had to ask him a few questions about that. So are we talking, though, like hundreds of computers on the ISS? Are we talking dozens?
I think, if I remember right, don't quote me, I think there's like 44.
Okay.
Wow.
And is it somebody's job up there to be like the ISS IT person?
I think it's the ground control handles all that, and if they need an astronaut to go pull a box, they just give them
the instructions to...
Yep. They have written instructions on how to do all that. The internal ones are fun. The external ones are not so fun. Maybe they have to go out.
There are sometimes times they have to go outside.
Oh,
I think
spacewalk.
I, I think they've only had to do one.
For a computer failure, though.
Yeah, for the entire time that it's been up there.
That's nice to hear. You know, just as like as computer people, I would imagine and hope that, like, you know, physical stuff or pumps or interlock or other things would fail more often than the computers. But given how computers work, you could see it going the other way, too.
They do have some testing software that Honeywell provides, so they can actually put the box in there and run test suite, and they have spares, so they can take, you know, let's say if this one piece did fail, they can put a new part in, put it back up on the shelf, and if they ever need it, they can just yank it out, put it back in.
How are these getting? Are these getting manufactured in the States? These machines, are they manufactured around the world? Like,
no, these are all manufactured in Honeywell in Glendale. But we do. There are equipment in Russia and in Italy also.
I guess I knew Honeywell was involved, but I guess I just didn't understand the depth.
Yeah.
It's not what I picture when I think of Honeywell.
Right.
But it's very cool.
Honeywell does a lot of things.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That's what I'm learning here.
Well, at my facility, it's that they do reaction wheels and gyros for satellites. Let's see what else they do. We do all kinds of things.
Do you get to use much Linux in the course of your work?
We do have a MDM test thing. They do use Red Hat. We use a lot of, like, the horizontal mates use Solaris. It's not Linux, but it is
still
Linux.
Yeah, still today, huh? Still some Solaris action.
We do use some of the, like, Cygwin products.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, I mean, we don't use Linux per se on some of our stuff, but, you know, kind of.
Some of the open source world's tools, at least.
Yeah, I mean.
It just seems, I mean, I guess, are they updating the systems up there in space? Are they installing patches and updates?
Yes, they do.
And they have an internet connection that they can just.
They have multiple different connections. They do have internet. They have some other ways, like SATCOM type of communications that they
use. And they're doing, like, Windows updates?
No.
I wouldn't think so. Right? I just can't imagine running Windows in space and keeping it up to date.
They do have laptops. Oxygen. They do have laptops that do have Windows on
it. And they update those, supposedly?
I think if they have to do it, they send it up as an image on a disk or something.
That makes sense.
At a next flight, and they just like ghost the whole thing.
A known validated tested image. Yeah,
I guess that makes sense.
Well, it was interesting because it was like, you know, how do you activate Windows from space? You know, so when we originally did some of this stuff, we actually had to get, you know, Microsoft to say, okay, we'll not have you do activations and stuff.
They gave you like a secret code you could put in there to bypass activation?
I don't remember what they gave
us. Yeah. It's like, we'll take care of it for these machines. That seems like an appropriate use case to bypass activation.
Yeah.
It's nice to have the ability to call up Microsoft and ask for that.
Yeah.
I don't think we could do that.
No, probably not.
We're going to be on a road trip. We'd really like not to activate Windows for a bit. I don't think we'd get very far.
Well, I'm not sure what the legalities of being in outer space are either.
Right. Yeah. If you agree to a EULA in space.
Right. I don't think your trademark applies here.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's pretty neat. And Wireshark helps make all that go.
Yeah, well, that's like I said, it's just another tool in our tool bag that we use for trying to diagnose issues that happen.
That's pretty cool, though. It's
we have a 1553 analyzer that looks all 5053 traffic. We have a SCSI analyzer, because there is some SCSI.
Still, huh?
Yeah, on some of our ground equipment.
So. Really? For disk or what?
Remember, this stuff was originally built in probably 95 or earlier.
Yeah.
And so some of the stuff for communications, we're still using SCSI back then, so it's still there.
SCSI disks, SCSI accessories. I mean, as long as you get everything right, get your numbers, get your SCSI number right, get your Terminator set up, it's not so bad.
Yeah, I mean, one of the MDMs have they used to have a rotating, you know, hard drive, and now they have solid state, and they're all basically SCSI based.
You can buy solid state SCSI devices?
No, Honeywell made it.
Oh, okay. Dang, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I don't think we can do that either.
All right, we'll bang it together, yeah.
Yeah, they made their own solid-state drive.
Bcache FS on a solid state SCSI. I want to try it.
You're telling me for them, it was easier to create their own device than just get off SCSI?
Well, because it's, you got to remember, all the stuff that they put in these MDMs have to be rad hard.
Certified.
I mean, they're basically the newest computer processor we use is like an old Pentium.
Wow.
And then that's the newest one. The other ones are like 386s because they are rad hard. They're not going to get flip bits or anything.
What have they done to them to make them harden? Do they?
I'm not sure what they've done.
And why can't they make them newer? Like,
I remember we were talking with Tim.
Yeah.
He was saying the same, right? Like, weren't they using an old Motorola or something?
Yep. An old PowerPC.
PowerPC, yeah.
But I think it was made by Motorola.
Well, I think it's because the newer chips have higher densities. So yeah. There's more of a air. Chance
that
of
makes
a,
sense, yeah.
More know, chance of an error.
Yeah, more chance of an error. Hmm. I think they do have newer processors. It's just the cost of getting it tested.
If I go to space, I don't want to bring an old computer. I want a nice computer.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think all the newer stuff are using newer rad hard stuff.
Can we get like an Apple M series that's rad hardened?
Yeah. Can I bring like a Ryzen machine too? Can we get hardened Ryzen? Rad hardened Ryzen. That just sounds cool.
Yeah.
So what are you hoping to pick up from the fest? Anything for work or just here in general?
Well, I'm here personally for myself.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out what I could say here. Company.
He didn't want to go into too much detail, so I just let it go there. But he's doing a kind of a swing of events too, which is pretty neat for work. Whenever you can get work to swing that. And what a wild world he's working in, huh?
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do to you both is to find someone like this in the crowd and to just send them to you guys without giving you a heads up at all and see what happens. And yeah, it turned out pretty good.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I can talk about Wireshark. It's been a minute, but let's talk about it. I went a whole different direction.
You know, he mentioned doing like a spacewalk to replace some of these computers.
Yeah.
And could you imagine that? Having to get your suit on, go through the airlock just to like, I don't know, flick this thing on and off or replace it or something.
Then you forgot the screwdriver.
And then like, what's also like, you go to a social event and they say, so what do you do for a living? Well, I repair computers in space. I mean, that's a wild job, right? That's a wild job. We tried something brand spanking new with this Linux Fest. We gave Brent the ability to go remote. Now, it wasn't perfect.
Oh, thanks.
Well, it wasn't your fault.
The technology, not you.
Yeah, it wasn't. We were on a 40 kilobit connection, so the codec is not fantastic. But the content was pretty great, and it was a lot of fun for us. We're going to try to use this to we got to remember after the show, we need to order you a new headset. We got to do that. There's some modifications that we learned that we need to make, but I think we got to figure it out. So I think we're going to be able to do this with even more success at Linux Fest Northwest. But for a brief moment in time, we set Brentley free. And he bumped into the chair of Texas Linux Fest. And our buddy Carl was there as well.
Hello, I'm Ted Gould. I'm the conference chairman. We're at Texas Linux Fest, and we've been going for about 10 years. It's 2010. This is our 11th conference, but we took a little break for the pandemic that happened. But this is our first one back after the pandemic, and we're excited to be here.
Did you say 11 years?
Yeah. So it's, 11 conferences. So it's been since 2010. We've been doing it for quite a while and all over Texas, in Irving and San Marcos and Austin.
That's amazing. And bouncing around like that, I would imagine, has unique challenges for organizing an event, but also unique opportunities. Can you give us a tour of that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's interesting because there's a huge tech community in Austin, and so we tend to get the most people were in Austin, but we're trying to figure out how to break into those other communities because there's a huge tech community in Dallas, there's a huge tech community in Houston, and how do we get into those communities? It's been a unique challenge, and I don't think we're good at it necessarily yet. We're just trying, but this year we partnered with the KCD folks to get them here, and I think that was really exciting because they brought a lot of Kubernetes energy. I think it's interesting to see how Linux has changed. I think a lot of people identified with Linux before, and there's not as many people who identify with Linux as much. They identify with Kubernetes, they identify with Raspberry Pi, they identify with Android, but we all know those are all Linux things, but they don't necessarily, I don't do Linux, I do Kubernetes. And so I think that's an interesting challenge going forward.
That reminds me of a point that our keynote speaker in 2019, the last event we had, Thomas Cameron, he brought that up in his talk about how there's all this move to the cloud and all these things, but if you're a Linux nerd, you've got a leg up. Like, this is the cloud is Linux.
Do you think in that way Linux is like an old term? or that there are new relationships to it?
You know, I think that some people do view it as an old term. I think it's kind of a foundational thing. It's like, is math an old term? Well, math math is an old term, and but I think it's going to flow through, and so I think you'll see as people move on for years and years and years, they'll say, oh wow, Linux was there. And so you're, you know, 22-year-old just out of college isn't going to say, I do Linux. They're excited about this new thing that's hot. But then they're like, oh yeah, my whole life was Linux.
I hadn't really put it together, but going to Scale and then Texas Linux Fest back to back, I realized that we're seeing a new trend develop post-COVID with these conferences. And that's like the co-located conference. Scale's done this for a while, but now we're seeing it take off in other places. They had like a KubeCon kind of event.
Yeah, Kubernetes Community Day or something like that.
And I think it works to different degrees of success. I don't know if I'd say it's a banger of success. You know, we saw this with Scale and NixCon and UbaCon. And the discussion is there a lot of crossover? Does this make it more economically viable? Is this a better way to make these more sustainable? Like, this is a new thing that's happening with Linux events.
Well, and that's, I mean, we're an educational nonprofit. It's about bringing the community together and allowing them to learn from each other. And I think that's the same thing. We could talk about it in the microcosm of, you know, Nix people learning about this, but the reality is that we're all learning from each other, and that's exactly what the mission of the nonprofit is.
Can you gents talk a little bit about, like, the hopes and dreams for future Texas Linux Fest? Like, this is a great one, I think a huge success. What's coming up next? What do you want to try, and how do you want it to grow?
Well, so I think we need to reestablish ourselves after the pandemic. I think a lot of people have talked to me about, like, oh, yeah, I didn't know this conference existed. I've lived in Texas for, you know, 20 years, and I didn't know it existed. I'm like, well, really? Like, we've been around. I don't know how you missed us. But and so I think we need to reestablish ourselves as an event on the calendar. A lot of people actually said, oh, this is the first one. And I'm like, no, it's not the first one. And even vendors were telling me that, you know, oh, this is the first one. And I'm like, okay, well, so I think we need to reestablish ourselves and get a constant slot. Even getting conference space after the pandemic was hard. And so we just need to be like, oh, yeah, every spring I go to Texas Linux Fest and get that pattern down. And then we can start to build on it. So I think reestablishing is the first part, then growing.
You mentioned a bit of a relationship with Scale, and I'm not that aware of that. Can you explain how that works?
So we're both under the same 501c3 nonprofit, Linux Fests. So if you go to linuxfest.org, they sponsor Scale, Texas Linux Fest, and a couple
DevOps Days LA, and I don't remember the rest of them. Yeah. ShellCon?
ShellCon, I think so, yeah. So they do a bunch of different conferences, and they kind of act as a fiscal sponsor for it. So they help us with the fact that you have to do, like, payments ahead of time and stuff like that. They handle those for us because we don't get vendor payments until later, and then they just do all the financial parts, and they're the actual registered 501c3.
Well, we appreciate what each of you are doing, so thank you very much for that.
Thank you guys for coming out. We really appreciate you guys coming here and, you know, being on the floor and talking to everyone. We really appreciate the work you guys put into it too.
Nice, thank you.
And promoting the conference, like, there are media sponsors, so Jupiter Broadcasting is, and we really appreciate that. All the promotion y'all have done on the show, talking this up. I know I saw quite a few attendees talking about how I can't wait to go to Texas Linux Fest and meet Chris and meet Wes and meet Brent. So that's just driving that kind of human connection. That's why I love Texas Linux Fest. Why I love a lot of conferences. All of the technical stuff is great and love it. But also, the most important thing to me is getting to see my friends and connect with people. Like, I have friends that I only see at conferences that live all over the world.
I want to take a moment and thank our Unplugged Core members, our core contributors. If you want to support the show directly, you can go to linuxunplugged.com and you can click on the core contributor link. This show has generally an ad spot right about here, but right now the ad market, what am I trying to say?
Aardvark.
The Aardvark ad market, which is really rough, is even worse than normal for podcasts, especially podcasts that focus on the Linux niche. It's just the state of things. It's fine. But if you'd like to help us keep going, you can contribute directly every single month by becoming a core contributor. You go to linuxunplugged.com and you can click on core contributor right there at the top of the website. Now, it wasn't all just about the fest, of course. We had to have ourselves a full Texas experience because it was both Brent and Wes's first time to Texas.
Well, it's my first time to Texas Linux
Austin
Fest.
Oh, all right. I read the doc wrong. But you both were first time Austinites? Texas Linux Festers. Not your first time to Austin or your first
time? It was my first time
to
Austin.
Okay, all right, good. All right, good. Okay, good. We'll go with that. We'll go with that. We'll go with first time to Austin. Jesus. It's like, you know, extracting milk from my knee, I tell you what. So I want to know what you both thought, just in general, because as somebody who spent like 6 weeks in Austin one time, I'm like an expert. I'll give you my quick take just as an update. It really feels like in the last 6 years, Austin has clearly become a food town. Like if you just want to take an eat vacation, you should just go to Austin, Texas, because there's everything there. And even the stuff that Texas traditionally sucks at, which is like Thai food, I can speak from experience, they get pretty good in Austin. And they got, breakfast places that are fancy. They got places that are real true, kind of like a Texas experience, like the burger place that we went to. Everything. As far as eating, you are covered, unless all you want is a salad.
Yeah, shout out to Sandy's, open since 1946, also right next to the venue.
Yeah, also shout out to those birds.
Yeah, the great-tailed grackle. Kind of a crow, corvid-looking bird with a big, long tail. And a strong desire to steal your lunch.
Yeah, don't let your guard down for a second. These things will take your burger from you. I mean, like, and they're making such a ruckus, too.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, they could be your car alarm, no problem.
Yeah, really. So we stayed a couple of days after Texas Linux Fest, and Wes didn't have as much time, but we, Brent and I, had a little extra time because, honestly, it was cheaper to fly out a few days later than it was to fly out on the weekend. So we stuck around, and we decided we had a car. Let's go head out into the Texas Hill Country. I've heard it's beautiful. I'd like to see it for myself. I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to natural beauty, being from the Pacific Northwest.
I've never heard you describe yourself this way.
But I am. My standards are very high. I think the Pacific Northwest is some of the most beautiful places and country in the world. Not the most, but it's in there, right? It's in there.
On a list somewhere, surely.
Definitely. In the top 10. Yeah,
there's a lot of beautiful places, definitely, too.
Yeah. Oh!
Top 10.
Top 12. Anyways, we get down to Texas. I'm like, all right, Texas, what do you got? Because I have got very high expectations. And I have been told over and over again the Hill Country is beautiful. And I was not disappointed. I really enjoyed it. So, Wes, we went out there and we went to some of the caves. I'll have some pictures if you go to chrislast.com on my Noster. But describe these caves because, I mean, they were just great.
Yeah, the Longhorn Cavern State Park, a limestone cave formed by the cutting action of an underground river that receded thousands of years ago. But, before it became a tourist attraction, it's used by Native Americans, Confederate soldiers, and outlaws. And then in the 1920s and early 30s, it was actually a nightclub that had shows being broadcast via radio back to San Antonio. Sadly, no shows going on when we were there.
But you remember when we went there, it was significantly cooler.
Oh, yeah.
Hot, underground.
80-something up at the top and, I don't know, 60-something down in the cave.
It's like $25 and you get a tour of all of these underground caves. But even if you just walk around the place, it's pretty neat. And
I distinctly remember you not really wanting to go down there because you thought maybe it was out of reach to of us who didn't
pay. All right, you're going
to
bring this up. All right, So Brent is like the most like rule follower you're going to until he's not. And then all of a sudden he's like this rebel that wants to just push the boundaries. And so I'm like, okay, well, we'll see where we go. We'll see. We walk out there and they have like all these signs about how you need to sign up for the tour. Sign up for the tour. Don't go over here. You can't go here. You got to be on the tour. I'm getting like a strong vibe that they clearly want us to pay to be out here. But Brent has this sort of, I don't know, you might call it Canadian French attitude. He's like, well, let's just go find what we find. And if they get upset, I'll just charm them and it'll be fine. I'll tell them I'm Canadian and I didn't understand and it'll work. And Wes and I look at each other and we're like, yeah, that probably makes sense, actually. So,
yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. All right. If you're going to take the blame. So we walk around the facility and I see all these signs about where we can't go. But we kind of walk the edge of that and go down a set of stairs and we end up in a cave where there's a whole bunch of signs. But this whole area seems to be open to the general public. But then to make it as embarrassing as possible, the tour group shows up while we're down there.
We're just kind of like hanging out, sitting in the cave, having a snack. Clearly like not without tickets.
On the, like sitting on these like really impressive carve-outs when we're just kind of having a snack.
And there was no sign that said, don't sit there, but it was kind of unclear.
But Wes, did I not say, before we went down the steps, did I not say, watch the tour group show up while we're down here? Did, yes. Did I not say that?
You sure did.
I did say that. So we're down there, and it's where the tour group kind of sets up and starts, and the guy that was giving the tour thought we were trying to, like, sneak in, and he gave Brent the sternest look I have seen on the entire trip. Like, don't you dare come along as a freeloader on my tour. So it was good, but it was about as embarrassing as possible.
Oh, you were embarrassed?
I was
having a good time.
I was so embarrassed. When the tour guide showed up, before then I was good, but the tour, I was so embarrassing. But then afterwards we saw pictures of, we got pictures of salamanders. We got some great shots of salamanders. We got some great walking, and it was all good, but for that brief moment, I was so mortified that he thought we were trying to, like, freeload on his tour.
I mean, they don't even turn the lights on in there until the tour comes in. Yeah. So they're serious about it.
But
I liked interpreting the signs and just seeing how far we can take
it. You weren't mortified? You weren't embarrassed by that entire situation?
No, because I thought we were on the right side of the signs.
It's true. We did, you know,
we technically were.
Yeah.
But you saw the look you got. Oh, you got a look.
Yeah. He didn't say anything, though, did he?
I think he said something like, sorry, guys.
He said something, something
like, sorry, I can't let you in. I'm not letting you in.
Yeah, but it was very stern. It's like when somebody gives you really bad news with a smile. That's what this guy did.
I learned this by being a photographer. And as a photographer, you, I don't know, push the limits of trying to get into places and stuff. And if you look like you know where you're going and what you're doing, you get into lots of spots.
Yeah.
I'm not responsible for wherever you try to go, though.
I mean, you maybe by yourself?
Oh.
Maybe would have made it in, but with all of us looking guilty?
Well, to be honest, that wasn't the goal. We weren't trying to get the tour. We were just trying to see as much as we could see just walking around. And I think we, check.
And we cooled off for a bit. And then we got to continue on the drive. We ended up at a great spot for food. And
The Colorado River just coursing all over. We crisscrossed it, I don't know, a couple of different times.
And
some lovely views. A castle included.
Yeah, we stopped and saw a castle. Who knew? Who knew there was castles in Texas? I didn't. And around that same time, we took Brent to his first Buc-ee's.
I did not know what a Buc-ee's was, and I didn't even really know until we got there what the experience was going to be. It was an experience.
Yeah. I would describe Buc-ee's as a place that where they had the idea of, what if we had so many gas stations you could just go shopping while you got gas? And then from there, birth like the wall of jerky and all of their, food and everything like that.
There were several jerky walls.
Yeah.
There was a lot of meat again. This is a theme from pretty much everywhere we went in Texas.
Yeah.
It was really the only thing I could eat. So I had more meat.
I always enjoy the people watching at these places. That's always a great part of it. The Buc-ee's is also an opportunity to get like little trinkets for family back home and stuff too.
Yeah, you got a bunch of things, didn't you?
Yeah, just little things for the kids and whatnot. That they also love Buc-ee's. So
Right here on the site it says world's cleanest restrooms. I don't know. Did you get to try that, Brent?
I did because Hadiya kept going on and on and on about it. So I figured I gotta try these things, and they're like fuel station washrooms, but the best that could possibly be within that definition. And I would say, yeah.
Yeah. Like, good solid walls and doors between the restrooms, good and clean and well-maintained.
Occasionally when I'm traveling, I ask a question to someone who's like behind a counter and then I immediately feel a bit embarrassed about it. And that happened at the Buc-ee's.
Oh, really?
And I got some food for lunch. And then I immediately asked this person who was kind enough to serve me a giant plate of meat. I said, is there anywhere I can sit here to enjoy my lunch? And she looked a little embarrassed. She said, no, you probably the only place is in your car.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that because it's kind of a restaurant in there.
They serve a lot of food.
Yeah.
It's mostly food.
But also Texas.
And just go to your car, dude. What's your problem?
Yeah.
You're here to get gas. What?
It's a cultural experience.
Yeah. So there was Buc-ee's for you. And then, of course, we did have that after party that was thrown by Tailscale and our buddy Alex. It was wonderful. Do you remember what the venue was called? I don't know.
Gibson Street?
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice memory. Yeah,
Gibson Street Bar in Austin.
Yeah. Good, nice, like, deck area where you could sit outside and enjoy the evening.
Yeah. That was nice. I mean, I think a good, obviously not the entire folks at the conference showed up, but there was a good mix of different people coming through. Plenty of space there in the bar to kind of hang out and get to mix with different groups. as always, you know, the audience is super inclusive and welcoming, and the folks at the conference, and felt like a lot of people were seeing old friends and making new friends.
You know, our dear friend Carl occasionally during the fest gave us some like inside baseball about what's going on. And during the after party, he said, hey guys, we kind of prepaid some of the drinks here and we have a limit, but we're nowhere near that limit. So have at her. And that for me was like the green light to try a bunch of drinks that I've been wanting to try for a couple of years. But also with that like Texas flair or even Austin flair, if you will. So I ended up having some great experiences, and I don't know if you boys did, but I got an old fashioned, which is, you know, not unique to Texas by any means. But what was unique was that they used a local bourbon, and the bartender literally like searched around for 30 seconds, which is a long time when they're like packed trying to make drinks. And then he grabbed this bottle off the shelf that he finally found and began to open it, like take the seal off of the bottle. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm getting a special drink here. And sure enough, it turned out Alex had ordered the same drink in Old Fashioned, but he didn't ask for the, like, you know, the Brent special. And mine was way better. So I had an amazing experience there. And then for the next drink that really hit me was, not hit me as in hit me, but hit me as in a memory. I figured I should get some mezcal, a drink with some mezcal, because oh, yeah. That's like regional, right? I asked him to make me something with a local mezcal, and same deal. He went looking on the shelf for the special mezcal and made me, I didn't mention what the drink was, but now that I've done some post-research, including up here in Seattle, I think it was a mezcalita, which is like some mezcal, which is like a Mexican agave alcohol. It's considered like an overcooked agave, or at least I think that's part of the translation. Quite an old drink, but it has a really super smoky flavor. So if you like smoky, it's for you. If you don't like smoky, you're going to hate it. But it had some lime in there, and it was delicious. So really a nice time for me.
Now, we do have some boosts to get to, and Eric is, from our podcast, our baller booster this week with 79,000 sats. Hey, rich lobster! Hello, Jupiter Broadcasting. The retro gamer in me certainly noticed the recent plays of Street Fighter II intro track just to hype us up on the live stream. The SNE version is fine, but let's be real. You got to try this next time. And he links us to the, oh boy, look at him with like,
wow,
with the S3 object storage linkage here. This is pretty great. That is good. Yeah. Yes, Eric, thank you. Those are great. Those are really great. And then, of course, there is also a remix version that has been, of course, you can't have a classic without a remix. Those are really good.
If I wasn't already hyped, I'd be hyped.
Thank you, Eric. Those are fantastic. I will save those after the show. Nice call. You know, you tuned right in. You got it. Appreciate that.
Hybrid Sarcasm came in with 74,205 sats, which...
I hoard that which your kind covet.
But hey, isn't that a familiar number?
Do you think so?
Yeah. What does Google have to say about it?
So you're telling me that there's a special... Like somebody just boosted in out of nowhere with a special number? That's never happened, West Payne.
I mean, it might be happening right now. It might be something known as a registry number?
Tough little ship. Little.
Here's a defiant boost to celebrate the best Trek ever, Deep Space Nine. Hardly a bad episode in the bunch, even the ridiculous ones.
Is it though? Is that true?
Hey, we got to watch the baseball episode on our trip. That was nice.
That is true. We Pluto TV comes in clutch every single time we go on a trip, doesn't it?
Yeah, one of our traditions is to play Star Trek 24 hours a day while
as
we're staying
to
in our Airbnb.
Yeah.
And I have to agree here with Hybrid. I hadn't really dove into Deep Space Nine. I mean, you boys are kind of giving me the Star Trek tour over the years. And I kind of gained a new appreciation for it. And you were explaining, Chris, to me that, like, the colors were new back then, and I sort of fell in love this trip.
Yeah, the original series is really bright, and then so the original series is famous for kind of being one of the first shows to really push color on TV, and then Deep Space Nine is famous for being one of the early shows to push a continuous narrative through seasons on television.
Yeah, right. You went from episodes in a bottle where everything sort of resets, and you go find a new planet with a new alien, and you figure out you know, what's going to happen that episode to a long-running cross-galaxy war over several seasons.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you, Hybrid, for that boost. We really appreciate it.
Now, Sean W. came in with a couple boosts, totaling 35,813.
Quacka waka, it's a treasure. Yippee!
Long-time listener, medium-time party member, and first-time booster.
Hey, wow. Thank you. Congratulations. You made the journey.
That's a lot of support.
And that's a lot of trekking.
Been listening since the Matt Hartley days, every year that you cover Linux Fest Northwest. I really wish I could be there. So, this year, I pulled that pin. I'm crossing the Pacific, and we'll see you all in Bellingham. Sean from Australia.
What?
Whoa!
That's nuts! Sean, that is ridiculously awesome. We cannot wait. So, hey, Sean W., remember.
And Sean follows up here and says, in case you didn't think I was serious, here's an on-the-move postcode boost from the airport. 3,045 Satoshis.
So they're on the move, Wes. Where are they at?
I think they're in the Melbourne airport.
Wow. Boosting us from the airport en route?
Which I think...
That's so great.
From the date of this boost means that they are probably planning on spending some time here in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh. Well, definitely plan to come to the barbecue.
How long is that flight? What, like... 18 hours or
20,
something?
I did it, so 24 or so.
You know, in Sean's honor, with this boost, you know, taking the effort to set up all of the things required to boost, especially when you're outside the States, and if they're staying a little extra, I feel like maybe we should do something on Monday or something, Sean. So make sure you come say hi. And I'll probably recognize you from the accent, but really appreciate you making that effort. That's incredible. That's really exciting. Also, somebody else who's made a just a real hero's effort to make it possible to show up at Linux Fest Northwest. It is our very own listener, Jeff.
B-O-O-S-T.
With 35,567 sats. And Jeff has been placing all of like the blocks in a row to like actually make it possible to show up at Linux Fest Northwest. And he wanted to send a little love to Brent, who glides around like a majestic Canadian goose.
I thought it was a Canadian moose. Oh, no, honk like a moose. Yeah. Right.
I'm surprised you don't know that.
Did we get the wrong brother?
Yeah, this might be the other one. Yep. You made it this far, though. I'm very impressed. You know what? I thought I would have been clued in sooner.
C-Dubs boosts in with 33,333 sats.
Coming in hot with the boost.
Have you tried Cubes OS? I was hesitant at first, but it's now my daily driver.
No way.
I want to hear more about this.
I would not believe C-Dubs. I would think that is BS, except they sent that in with Boost CLI, which is, if they sent it in with Boost CLI.
All right, this is serious. Finally, the desktop that puts privacy and security first.
Wow.
Now, here, boys, we've got a challenge.
Oh, no.
Oh.
C-Dubs says, I challenge you to get Cubes OS going, but with a twist. Instead of the default Debian or Fedora Cubes, use NixOS. And then... tell me how you did it.
Is this a thing you can do?
It's supposed to be a bunch of, you know, sort of what, isolated VMs tied together with the cubes magic?
Hold on, I gotta look
this
up.
See, I feel like this is the perfect challenge. It's like, here's something that seems simple, but with an extra show-approved, love topic to it.
I can understand that you could have VMs that run NixOS, but could you actually have NixOS as the host platform for CubesOS?
That's what they're asking.
What? And then also it makes me wonder, could we build such a thing?
Make it so.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe we should.
Make it so.
All right. Thank you, C-Dubs. I think we're going to need more on that, but that is something I am very interested in. We are pre-Linux Fest Northwest, so it is very possible, just to be honest with you, I may forget about this, but I do like this idea. You're already Googling, aren't you?
A little bit, yeah. But, you know, maybe send us in a reminder boost after in a couple weeks.
Yeah, after Linux Fest.
Like Cubes Crew, if you're out there, also yes. Boosting.
Yes, Cubes Crew. Yes, the Cubes Crew. Please let us know if this is a thing.
VT52 sent us in 31,337 sats, which I think is like a elite sats with an extra 30K.
B-O-O-S-T!
What's that? Sorry, I couldn't hear you over the sound of NixOS running on my Mac Mini M1.
Hey-yo!
Hey, interesting.
Just kidding. It is, of course, really, really quiet.
Can you get access to GPU acceleration? Like, what's going on with this, VT? Because I've maintained that when the Asahi project makes it possible, or whatever you're using, it does seem like the Mac Mini could make a nice little home server, especially if Jellyfin or Plex could get access to video acceleration. But I suppose if the CPU's fast enough, maybe you don't need it. I'd love to know a little more on that, because it does seem like that'd be great. I think I measured the Mini at somewhere around 10 watts, wow. 10, 15 watts.
That's great.
Yeah, and even that, and that was when it was like doing stuff. So, you know, I don't know what it is when it's idle. That was when it was doing stuff, according to a smart plug.
We'll have this in the show notes, but VT links us to what looks like an excellent Markdown docs file all about how to get this going, like a UEFI standalone setup, you know, to make all the Asahi bits play nice with NixOS. Probably something worth checking out later.
Aaron comes in with a row of McDucks, 22,222 sats.
Things are looking up for old McDuck.
Yeah, this might be the self-hoster in me, but I'm surprised that Docker wasn't even mentioned in the top five apps. It's like the number three app installed for me. Good point. I suppose most people, I think, were taking a desktop focus.
But, you know, I mean, I do end up installing Docker on my desktop.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Wes has had to also suffer Docker desktop on the Mac for work purposes from
this
time to time.
This is true, though. I am free for the moment.
Yeah, nice. Oh, interesting. But I think also would be on my, like, top seven list for sure. Absolutely. I don't know if it made it on my top five. It would be, like, my number two for a server deployment. But for my desktop, I bet you it's in my top seven. Not top ten because, well, we don't talk about my top ten.
Mrs. Enyatech 666 boosts in with 20,000 sats.
Boost!
Boosting in again for my husband. Thanks, guys, for all the hard work you do. Glad my husband has this community.
That is amazing. Mm, shout so out sweet. To him, too. I don't want my wife to do that. She boosted in some of my favorite shows. Come on, honey. That is really great, though. Thank you, Miss Enyatech. We appreciate it. Now, we had some live boosts come in as we're doing the show, so I don't know if we have all of them, but Adversary 17 came in with 7,000 sats to say, simply, the most elegant boost possible. Dexord came in with 6,912 sats to say that the Raspberry Pi 4 had synced to a Western Digital Blue 1TB SSD using a USB to SATA adapter. Using, you know, on a Pi 4, it's useful, right? He says, I am not new to Linux or self-hosting, but I haven't run my own node yet, so I felt like the next appropriate project was setting one up. Happy Sunday. Always looking forward to the pod. Thank you, sir. Faraday of Fedora came in with 4,444 sats from Fountain to wish Mr. Payne a happy birthday with an additional row of ducks.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Oh, look at that. A birthday boost for Wes. We also got a New Zealand boost from
Falkland Tim.
Okay. I was going to say Falkland Tim.
Oh, this is fun. Boosting in from New Zealand. No idea what you're all talking about. Just saw the little red live icon. Here's all the hard-earned fountain sets.
Hey!
That's neat. Thank you.
Make it so.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
In a similar sense, Original Size came in with 9,001 cents to say, pleasant surprise to see Jupiter Broadcasting on Fountain.
It's over 9,000!
Yes, we are now live on all the podcasting 2.0 apps. And then we finally got our Spaceballs boost of the episode. Kirasia comes in with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sats.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life.
And this was a response to the question we had about how would you build your own vanishing system. And they write, for a vanishing system, the easiest one I've done was a live distro. I made a custom live distro that was configured the way I like it. I stole the idea from the Cali folks. But that way, you could just boot into it directly, make grub boot it, or kexec if you want to.
Darn right.
Yeah, pick your live CD of choice. Why didn't we think of that?
Well, I mean, that's a nice, yeah, right? You can kind of customize it, add on whatever extra packages you need if they're in the repo, and make a new ISO.
I still maintain that I love the idea that you just somehow with, I mean, really be three commands, create the RAM disk, kexec into your environment. Well, you no. Create the RAM disk, restore the ButterFS, then kexec in the environment. And you boom, you're good to go.
I'm excited to make you do your first kexec sometime soon.
Yeah, I watched you do it so many times, I feel like I've done it, you know?
Now, Zack Attack came in with 5,321 Satoshis. Is on the topic of Tails, saying that when they want to run something that isn't going to be saved on a machine that they're in front of, what would be beneficial, though, is a way to have two passwords unlock different sections of persistent storage. That way, if someone, you know, forces you to unlock it, you have some plausible deniability there. And I will confirm Veracrypt, which I used to give this a spin when we looked at it in past episodes, does exactly that. It allows you to set up two passwords, and one of them, when you throw it in there, just gives you a bunch of photos of Wes, and the other one hides your OS, which is exactly what you're looking for.
What now? What?
don't you? Okay. Isn't that your choice?
No, I guess not. I guess not, but okay. All right. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Mick Lang comes in with 4,096 sats.
Fun will now commence.
I think that might be like a 4K boost.
Oh, so is there a special sound we should have for that?
Maybe.
They write, I hope I'm not too late to answer episode 556 question about the first five things I install after a fresh Linux installation. Here are mine. Number one, Firefox. Number two, Fish Shell.
Nice.
Hey, yo.
Yeah, definitely. Number three, Git. Number four, NeoVim.
Nice.
Number five, Yadam. Yet another dot. Files manager.
Oh, we didn't hear very many dot files managers, and that's surprising.
Yeah, what? You're just going to use your tools without configuration?
It gets me so worked up.
Gene Bean, our pal Gene Bean, boosts in with a row of ducks. Not chiming in with our pick, Atuin, to say, I love Atuin and self-host the server at home.
Now, Taco Strange came in with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Satoshis, and you know what that is.
That might be a Spaceballs boost.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5
Yes.
That's amazing. I've got the same combination on my luggage.
Home Assistant is what got me into self-hosting and back into Linux as a daily driver. I discovered it on accident while looking through the Raspberry Pi imagery at all the available images and came across Home Assistant. I tried it out, and it's now at the center of my smart home, and I can't live without it. It quickly outgrew the Pi, and it's currently running on a VM in Proxmox.
That is a neat story.
Strange. That's incredible. You just discovered it while, like, browsing through Raspberry Pi images and, like, hey, what's this Home Assistant thing?
Never even thought to browse through Raspberry Pi images.
Yeah. That's, wow, not what I would have expected, and I love it. 40 Deuce came in with 4,242 sats, and they write, Otten is a nice pick. I know, it's horrible. I'm going to read Otten, which is A-T-U-I-N, is Austin for the rest of the day. What? No.
Yeah, Austin.
Yeah,
no. Austin. Okay, great. That way we keep with the Texas theme.
Oh, I can you blame me?
No.
Can you blame me? I mean, it looks like Austin.
Just add a T and it's Tatooine.
Well, and maybe move that T, you know. Austin has some great features, but I simply wasn't aware of them when I had tried it. I appreciate the nod to Terry, great Austin. Thank you, 40 Deuce, and thank you very much for sending in 4,242 sats.
And a little shout out to Terry Pratchett there. I like that a lot. Tomato boosts in with 12,345 sats.
I think that's pronounced tomato, Wes.
We're going to have to go right to ludicrous speed.
Two things for Brent's ergonomic interest.
Ooh.
Ensure the basics, arm and hand positions, and cross shifting especially. Brent, in particular, might be interested in the Tech Shinobi keyboard, which is a mechanical based on the old ThinkPad layout, including a track point. I love mine. Currently working on a split keyboard design, I guess, the people behind that keyboard are, with a track point, so that also might be worth waiting for.
You know what this boost does for me? First of all, it lets me know that I have ergonomic interests, but also makes me realize that the audience knows me better than I do, because I didn't know I was interested in a ThinkPad-like mechanical keyboard until, you know, Tomato mentioned it. Tomato?
I believe it's Tomato. I mean, you know, there's an H in there.
Oh, you should check this out. I'll put a link in the doc.
Yeah, you should. I actually think you'd like this a lot, and I think you could travel with this thing, too.
What?
Yeah, I think you could.
I didn't even consider that.
You could standardize on one great keyboard that goes with you everywhere.
You know, I have to say thank you to everyone who's been sending me keyboard recommendations and ergonomic recommendations. I have a giant list of keyboards now that I just can't decide from, so thank you. Interstellar Dave came in with 10,000 sats from Castomatic.
This is the way.
Hey, Chris, you mentioned the issue about accessing Tailscale while staying at hotels. I bought one of those new GLINET devices, the MT3000, and have it running on Tailscale. It's about as rock solid as the Apple TV, and every device connected gets the benefit of local network access as well. The only pain has been with the crappy hotel captive portals. I do, however, find the best option is to start with my laptop to access the hotel Wi-Fi, then use the MAC address cloning option in the router interface to clone my laptop. I then disconnect from the Wi-Fi on the laptop and connect with the router, and voila! I bring this and my streaming media stick pre-configured to log into my router's access point, and it's golden.
That's a killer little preset traveler setup, sounds like.
Yeah, we did pack the GLINET, ours, which is not that one, but we did pack ours, and then never actually had the opportunity to break it out because there was decent Wi-Fi at the venue, and then at the Airbnb, I think this is the best internet we've ever had at any of the Airbnbs we've ever stayed at.
It was Google Fiber. It wasn't I don't think it was gig symmetric or anything, but it was still fiber under the hood.
Quite solid. So I packed it, and I never had an excuse to use it. And then also they had a Roku, and we just used Pluto TV, so we didn't really need anything special for that. And then they had a Plex app, so if you wanted to do something, you could. You didn't, you know, so it just didn't really come up. But I, you know, you never know. We may have to bust it out at Linux Fest Northwest. Jordan Bravo comes in with 10,101 sats.
Smoke if you got them.
Boosting to register my interest in a JB camping meetup, assuming it's family friendly. On an unrelated topic, I came across two Nix projects of interest, a GUI editor for Nix configs and a GUI store for Nix OS, inspired by the GNOME Software Center. I'll put links in the show notes. We've seen a couple of these.
I think so.
But good to have.
Oh, these are both from the Snowfall folks. The I think which is part of the Snowflake stuff that we tried out. Taking it to the next level. Love to see it. BHH32 comes in with 5,000 sats. More feedback from our top 5 essential apps episode. When I reinstall on Ubuntu-based system, like say Pop OS, I actually use a Python program to install things that I use every time, and then links to their GitHub. I will be converting it to Rust, though, in the next couple months.
Uh-oh. You know what happens when you convert things to Rust, Wes? You get a Rust theme. So be careful. If you don't want to go around and have that, just turn that off.
Thanks for writing BHAs, because I kind of wondered if we'd see some of this. You know, like there's lots of great tools out there, but knowing our audience, I was sure some folks were kind of rolling things themselves. And, you know, like a Bash script or a Python program or a Rust stuff, you can get a lot of leverage out of that.
No, I disagree completely. You're totally wrong, Wes Payne.
Now, the Galactic Starfish boosted in twice with 3,333 sats times two. Now, this number is from Adam Curry's Boostgram Ball, if I remember correctly. He calls it a stripe and has a special sound effect. I can't seem to find that clip, though, so you just have to believe me.
Also, I like the number, 3,333 rings.
I also had an idea regarding paying maintainers. Value for value could be really impactful here. I've had an idea to bring V for V to the Minecraft mod space, but it could actually make a massive difference to the desktop Linux ecosystem as well if there was a way to stream sats to maintainers. Users would probably want to set a stream period for a week, let's say, or a month just to curb privacy concerns. I don't have the know-how nor the time to throw at this right now, but sending this idea out there, maybe someone's willing to take it on.
I hope so. It does seem like there should be some kind of crossover. If we can solve the problem for podcasts, it seems like we should be able to solve the problem for open source software.
We all use Austin, that shell app.
Yeah.
Us, you know,
Austin.
Right. And then you kind of have, there's a plugin there that looks at all the commands that you run. And then from that, it sends boosts based on, you know, just on your usage.
That's not terrible.
Not actually horrible. Southern Fried Sassafras comes in with a row of ducks. Wes wants to shoot hard drives at the range. Sounds like he's going to Self.
I still do want to do that. That seems pretty fun. I don't know about this year, but we've got to make it to Self sometime.
One of these days. Yeah, day two of the Texas Linux Fest stream did get a little spicy.
TuxMM comes in with 5,000 sats.
B-O-O-S-T!
Top five-ish apps for me installed on a new Linux system, either Debian or NixOS. MegaSync for synchronizing files across my devices.
Sure.
Firefox, if it's not included already. Mm. Ah, a Logseq user for synchronized notes.
All right.
Trying to keep every bit of my daily life info in Logseq. You know, boost back in ToxMM and let us know how that goes.
Well, and what do you mean when you say you're trying to get, like, your every bit of daily life? Are you talking, like, your food, what you did at work? Like, what does that mean? And
daily,
what are you getting
journal?
From that? Yeah. I have thought about keeping a food journal, just see if I could, you know, figure out a good diet and things like that. But
it changes you.
Boy, it seems like a lot of work.
Worth it.
They also install Detox, which is a CLI tool to remove spaces and stuff like that from file names. That sounds pretty handy. And last but not least, YTDLP, which we know and love.
I wouldn't know what to use that for. Thanks, Tux. Appreciate that. Noodles comes in with 5,000 sats.
B-O-O-S-T!
I have an app pick. It's Jovian NixOS. It's a NixOS implementation of StreamOS for the Stream Deck. I installed it day two of having my Steam Deck, and I have been very happy with it ever since. Never looked back. So, J-O-V-I-A-N, Jovian NixOS. You think I got that right?
I think so. I think maybe there's a hidden challenge in here. What about like a little showdown? We've got Jovian NixOS, and we've got Bazite, that sort of a Fedora Atomic-style project that's also targeting the Steam Deck.
Right.
Let's see how they compare.
Yeah. How do they compare? Versus, I mean, you got to beat the stock experience.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You got to give me a good reason to go with something else. I guess I haven't done the work, but I'm not quite sure what they are. But it does seem like a kind of a compelling
challenge. Let me borrow your Steam Deck. It'll be fine. We'll break it.
Okay, I think listener Jeff should try this on the plane.
Definitely. Yeah,
that's the way to go.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right. Thank you, everybody who boosted in. We had 46 boosters because we were really stacking across two episodes. So there's an extra long boost segment this week. But we really appreciate it because we stacked 513,286 sats. Mega! Thank you, everyone. This is a value for value production, which means the audience can send in what they thought the show was worth to them in a boost with their message. They get us talking. It's actually one of our favorite segments because it's unplanned. It really is part of the community contribution to the show. You just need a new podcast app. You can boost into the show with those. You can also listen live from Texas Linux Fest or Linux Fest Northwest or whatever we're doing. That's all part of the podcasting 2.0 standard. Thank you, everybody who boosted in. We appreciate it. And we do have some picks to get to before we get out of here as well. I want to mention Shortwave, since we'll be live, and if you'd like to listen from the desktop, Shortwave is a Linux desktop app that will stream internet radio stations right there in a native application with 30,000 stations built in.
Oh.
And jblive.fm is one of them. So if you just search for Jupiter Broadcasting in their built-in directory, our stream will come up.
Don't worry, it's also packaged in Nix.
Oh, good, good. And you can listen live next weekend. So you don't have to be on a mobile app. You could do it from the desktop at jblive.fm, or you could go grab Shortwave. Brent, I want you to install it and try it, okay?
Okay. How much time do I have again?
All the time in the world. I don't mean right now, Brent.
Oh, sorry.
You've got a show to finish.
All right, yeah. Focus. I just meant in general. You should give it a try.
Will do.
Yeah, jblive.fm. You could also just plug that into your browser. What I like about Shortwave, though, is that you can create a sublibrary of your favorite stations. So I have like a handful in there. Of course, you can also find newer stuff if you're just like, okay, let's try out this internet radio thing. It's got a really nice app. And if your desktop supports it, it'll show up in the media playback controls. And if you're on GNOME, it just seamlessly integrates with the GNOME desktop.
Oh, this is fun. They have trending there, what other users are listening to. This is a lot more developed than I think I expected for a FOSS app.
Yeah, and so there's, it turns out, a ton of content out there on these radio streaming apps.
Christmas vinyl HD.
You know, actually, Christmas music was one of the things I used the internet radio for, just and then kind of took it from there. And also, you'll like this, Wes, and this is what kind of got me using it, is it has solid Chromecast support.
Is that right?
Yeah, so you can tune into like a holiday radio station or whatever you're listening to, whatever your mood is, and Chromecast it as well. So that's not so bad. So check it out. Shortwave. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's probably packaged in your distro, and of course it's up on FlatHub too.
And even has a dark mode.
Well, good, good. Also, an official happy birthday to Mr. Wes Payne. Your birthday was while we were all, you know, in the middle of traveling and all of that, so... Hat tip to Mr. Wes Payne for making Around the Sun one more year.
Can't imagine a better crew to spend it with.
Aw. Also, thank you for joining us for this Gen 2 episode. This is, you know, Gen 2 Day on the show, and we hope you enjoyed it. And I hope we'll see you at Linux Fest Northwest next week as well.
You got that stage 2 finished, didn't you?
Don't forget, we do want to hear about your very first Linux box. What was great about it? There must have been something great about it. And I'm willing to bet there's something awful about it as well. So boost those in. We'll be doing also a live Q&A during the Linux Unplugged next week.
See you next week. Same bad time, same bad station.
Yep, that's it for now. That's it for now. Links to what we talked about, linuxunplugged.com/559er. A bunch of great shows over at jupiterbroadcasting.com, like Coder Radio, self-hosted, and This Week in Bitcoin. Find it all at jupiterbroadcasting.com. And if you want even more show, become a member. Our Unplugged Core gets the entire live stream, which is like 247 hours at this point. And if you don't want it, you can also get a short, tight, ad-free version of the show. We got both available for you. Choose your own size. Thanks so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Unplugged program. We'll see you back here next Tuesday. And when I say Tuesday, well, I actually mean Sunday.